Previously on Cocaine Air.
I'm in the cocaine business, man. Not marijuana anymore.
And TJ is now making $1 million a week in the mid-1980s, flying a plane load of cocaine from Colombia to Luis's secret landing strip in the Bahamas.
Well, I started developing a pretty good reputation doing these one-a-week trip, getting $1 million.
And eventually, cocaine kingpin Pablo Escobar gets wind of TJ's stellar reputation. Pablo heard of you.
Heard of me through a couple of people. Because they were always looking for guys that are like stand-up guys. Guys that are not getting high without an airplane. Guys that are pros.
So Pablo Escobar offers to pay TJ $5 million a plane load to fly cocaine for him. That's at least $5 million a week in TJ's pocket. There's just one problem. Since TJ is flying for Pablo Escobar now, he can't land on that secret runway in the Bahamas anymore, because that runway is owned by Luis, the previous cocaine guy he was flying for. So TJ scrambles to find a new runway he can land Pablo Escobar's plane load of coke on. And in a bold and ballsy move, TJ ambushes the head of the Bahamian FAA at a local bar and offers to hire him to look the other way.
He says, "How much is this pay?"
I'm Jonathan Walton, and this is Cocaine Air, the TJ Dominguez story, episode 5. I'm the guy signing the checks around here.
So if you remember, I was buying weed from the government of the Bahamas, right? So I had some good contacts in the government.
And one of those contacts tells TJ where he can casually run into the head of the Bahamian version of the FAA. A bespectacled and lanky Caribbean man in his 50s, wearing a navy blue uniform with a government badge and numerous military patches. He kind of looks like a renegade Eagle Scout.
Well, he's always, every Friday, he goes to this watering hole after he gets out of work for drinks. So he says, "We'll go over there and talk to him today. He'll be there." So I said, "Okay, fine." So we go over there, we go by the pool site. We're hanging around by the pool site the way we are now. And he says, "There he is." He's walking up to a little tiki bar. There's nobody in the tiki bar. It's around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The guy walks up, he comes up to stools, sits down and orders a drink. So I tell my buddy Hunter, "Okay, go over there and talk to him. Break the ice and then call me over." You know, he said, "No, you could talk to him." I said, "No, man, the guy's dressed in a goddamn custom outfit, you know, with the bars and all that. I don't know this guy. You go talk to him." He goes, "It's cool, man. You can go talk to him." We're arguing back and forth. You know, I'm having a couple of absolutes on the rocks. A couple of absolutes later, I said, "Okay, fine, I'll go talk to him." So I walk up to the bar with this guy sitting three stools away, and I clear my throat, thinking and hoping that he'd turn around and look at me. Guy never even looks at me, right? He ignores me, right? The bartender comes up. I said, "Give me an absolute on the rocks with a twist of lime." Okay. So I get my absolute. I turn around, looking at the guy. The guy won't even turn around and look at me, right? So I drink this drink. I order another one. All right, the guy's still like, "I'm not even there." Finally, on the third absolute, I walk up, I stand up, and I push the chair over. And I say to the guy, "Hey, listen, I have a mutual friend that said that I could talk to you about something sensitive." He said, "What's your friend's name?" I said, "Frankie." He said, Frankie what?" I said, "Frankie, just Frankie." He said, "I don't know no Frankie, man."
The Frankie TJ's referring to here is Benjamin Frankie, or Franklin, the U.S. president on the $100 bill. This Bahamian airport official just isn't getting it, but he's about to.
I said, well, I got a picture of Frankie. Maybe you might recognize his picture. He says, okay, man. So I reach in my back pocket and I pulled, I had 20 grand in hundreds. I peel out one Frankie and I put it on top of the counter. I put another one on top of that one. I'm $10,000 almost into this stack. And the guy says to me, okay, man, what is it that you want to talk about that's sensitive? What do I have to do for this? I take the stack and I push it in front of him. What is it that's so sensitive? I said, I want to talk about making you rich. He said, making me rich? I said, yeah, I want to talk about making you rich. He said, what do I have to do for making me rich? I said, nothing. I want you to do nothing. He says, you're going to make me rich and I have to do nothing. I say, yeah, that's right. So I bend over and I say, I want you to do nothing when I land my airplane full of cocaine in your airport. I want you to go get a cup of coffee and not do a goddamn thing, nothing. He says, how much is this pay? I said, $500,000, half up front, half when I leave. He says, how many times a month can you do this, man?
That Bahamian airport official goes on to become very, very wealthy, making $500,000 to look the other way each time TJ lands his cocaine-filled airplane in the Bahamas. And how would you get the cocaine from the Bahamas to South Florida?
So once we landed in the Bahamas, what we would do is that cocaine would go to a secure, safe house. And that was guarded also by guns all the way around. And I'm paying $1 million to the government to land the plane.
Because those payments started out at $500,000.
$500,000.
How do they then pop up to $1 million?
It's called greed. It's called greed. He told me last time, he said to me, unless you give me $1 million, your boys are getting locked up.
You know, the actor Jack Palance once said, the only two things you can truly depend on are gravity and greed. And in the Bahamas, a third world nation, you can't exactly crack open a coconut and become an instant millionaire. And TJ knows that better than most. So he goes on to find multiple airports on multiple islands in the Bahamas to land his cocaine-filled airplanes on. And all these shady airport officials on the take start getting insanely jealous of one another.
I get a phone call from Jack, my number one guy. He says, hey, T. He said, yeah, Jack, what's going on? He said, you need to get your ass down here right away. I'm in jail. He said, why are you in jail? He said, they got me locked up over here in the Bahamas. I said, why? He goes, get down here right now. I said, all right. So I jump on my plane. I fly down to the Bahamas. I go see the officer that's got him locked up. His name is Brown. And I say, what's going on here, Officer Brown? How come you got my guy locked up? He says, we haven't broken the law here. We haven't done anything wrong. I haven't smuggled or anything like that. Why you got my guy locked up? You know what he says to me? I hear you've been working the outer islands. You need to start spreading that money around. So the irony of the whole thing is, so you're locking up my guy because we're not breaking the law. Not because we broke the law, because we're not breaking the law in your backyard. He wanted to get paid. And if I'm working, there's 700 islands in the Bahamas. So I'm out there working some other island. I'm neglecting him. He doesn't get a paycheck. So now he's pissed off because I'm not bringing money to his island, or really better, to him.
You see, while TJ is in fact operating on that particular island in the Bahamas, he isn't landing cocaine there anymore.
And that was a base. That was a home base that I had. I had towers there. I had backup engines for my speedboats. So it was like a base. I'm not doing stuff there. I'm keeping that in the event that something was to go wrong. I have a spare boat that I could run here and run there. If I need another engine, I don't have to come to the United States. I can go there and get something taken care of. So I'm not breaking the law there. So this guy says, you better start bringing some money over here or I'm going to harass every time that I see one of you guys. I'm going to lock them up. So I said, all right, listen, Brown, I'll make it happen, man. So I called a couple of friends of mine and I said, hey guys, I got a great island you guys could work at. And I got this guy turned. I say, hey, Brown, I got some people here. They're going to take care of you. Now leave my guys alone.
Eventually, though, that greedy airport official really gets under TJ's skin. So TJ cuts him off.
I stopped paying him because I didn't like to be hustled. I didn't like to be painted into a corner. And I didn't like his attitude of just kept pushing. I started with 500, went to 650, went to 750. And then he made the big jump to a million. And that's when he said to me, unless you take care of me, I'm going to lock up your boys. It's $1 million fee from now on. And that's when I said, okay, fine. I'll give you $1 million. Well, I picked up all my pieces and I went to scout other islands.
I'm so hungry.
If you're like me, then what's for dinner can be a complicated question to answer. I thank my lucky stars I found Omaha Steaks. Dinner's handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And the quality of these steaks is just out of this world, better than anything I've ever bought in a supermarket. They've got ribeyes for special occasions, juicy burgers for a cookout, grilling chicken, seafood, and gourmet franks. Omaha Steaks has what you want. They even have delicious sides, dessert, and more. So a great dinner is minutes away. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, not minutes. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, mostly because I think dispensaries are a little overwhelming and pretentious. That's just me. You do you. But there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people can buy cannabis. You know how most dispensaries make you choose between strains with ridiculous names and you have no idea which one's for you? Well, that's what Mood.com figured out. And by the way, you can get 20% off your first order with promo code WALTON. If you go to Mood.com and click Shop by Mood, it'll tell you which strain does what. Want to be more social at a party? There's a flower for that. Need to focus and get work done? There's a flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, there's a flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and arrives in a discreet box. Best of all, everything's backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code WALTON. So head to Mood.com and get 20% off your first order now.
And then I came across a hotel that was not in good shape, and it was $3-5 million at the time.
So now that that Bahamian airport official wants $1 million every time TJ lands a plane, buying that hotel for $5 million actually turns out to be a way cheaper option.
If it's $5 million, it's five landings, it pays for itself right away. When I got the hotel, it was called Hawk's Nest. It was there were bungalows, a lot of bungalows and a clubhouse, but it had everything I needed. It had a marina, and it had its own private landing strip.
The 26 Lima cleared for touch and go.
And now what I did was when I acquired the hotel, I under renovation, we're right now or not open. We're renovating the rooms. Yeah, I'm painting them all with powder cocaine. I didn't want people in there, I had the best paying customers.
And that's a great cover too.
Yes, because it was.
Renovation could take forever.
Right.
Who can say when it's over?
Exactly. And these are people that are drifting. These are boat people. It's not like going to Nassau. This is what they call an outer island. Outer Islands got very little traffic. What you see in the Outer Islands are your millionaires, your movie stars, people that can afford a chartered airplane because there's no scheduled airline going there. Unless you have a boat or you own your own airplane or you charter a plane, you're not going to the Outer Islands.
And what are the names? What are they named?
Oh my gosh, there's 700 of them. There's Cat Island, Long Island, Cat Key, Great Harbor, Siskin, the Abaco, Bimini. Bimini South and Bimini North, because it's the closest.
As the months tick by, TJ is flying multiple plane loads of cocaine every week for Pablo Escobar. and making tens of millions of dollars doing it. At one point, Pablo actually stops paying TJ in cash and starts paying him in cocaine. So now TJ is not only smuggling cocaine, but he starts selling it too, making many millions more. And TJ starts building his own cocaine empire.
I did what no other smuggler had ever done in the history of smuggling. And that is fly my own plane, drive my own boat, bring it in, transport it on the land, sell it, collect the money, take the money, send it to Europe, bring it back laundered, and invested it. That's why they actually call me Ciclone, which is cyclone, because I was everywhere. I was on the boat, I'm on the plane, I'm on the ground moving it.
So just so I understand, you got the cocaine, you landed in one of the islands in the Bahamas,
right.
You eventually were storing it in the hotel that you bought and was under renovation, and then you would put it on boats from that hotel.
What we do then is we want to time what vehicles I'm using to bring it into the United States. So when I say time, if it's a sports fishing vessel, it's going to take longer. Are we going to Cocoa Beach, or are we going to the Keys, or are we coming into Miami, Fort Lauderdale area? And that changed according to how the government was concentrating their task force. I stayed on top of the papers, buddy. Here's what happens. If I wake up in the morning and I see a bust in Miami, speedboat,
the Coast Guard offloaded nearly 14,000 pounds of cocaine confiscated in the Caribbean Sea and Atlantic Ocean.
Well, the way the mind works, if I'm an agent, oh man, I want to concentrate on speed, but these guys are coming in Miami. So now their eyes, their subconscious is geared for speedboat in Miami. So I'm going to come in now with a sports fishing vessel. And I'm not coming in Miami. I'm going to come up Cocoa, or I'm going to go down to the Keys. Wow. And so those are decisions that I made based on, call it instinct, call it my crystal ball, call it intuition, call it whatever you want to call it. But I made the right calls. I didn't lose a trip of cocaine.
Which is an incredible feat, because any South Florida local will tell you smugglers lose tons of cocaine every day. I mean, it's literally washing up on the beach and on the 6 o'clock news every single day.
Officials say packages with 146 pounds of cocaine washed up over the weekend.
But none of that washed up cocaine belongs to TJ. His operation runs like a well-oiled machine. Because he surrounds himself with the most talented people that he personally trains. And paradoxically, TJ doesn't hire experienced drug smugglers at all. He likes newbies.
Why? Simple. First of all, if you're coming to me with a history, then you're bringing me your troubles. Second of all, now you're coming to me, and at some time or another, you're going to try to dictate to me what you think is right. And no, it's not what you think is right. It's what I think is right. I'm the guy signing the checks around here. So it's my way or the highway, and I had that attitude. I'm the one sitting here while everybody else is swinging on chandeliers and opening up bottles of champagne. I'm brainstorming how to make this thing a little bit better and safer for all of us. So I stayed away from those experts. All those experts, they scared me. Who would I recruit? American Airlines. I went and, pal around a couple of my guys. We became friends with a couple of those guys, and eventually when we get to know you a little bit better and get to find out how you are a little bit better, American Airlines is paying $200,000 a year. And you're working your butt off. And I got a better plan. I'll give you $200,000 a weekend. I can guarantee you a trip a month. If you want, you do two trips a month, that's $400,000. Now, what are you making again in American Airlines? $200,000 a year? So, you know, you get quicker to retire with me. So I can.
So they would moonlight then, right? They'd be flying by day for American Airlines, then flying runs for you.
Yeah, yeah. And eventually they would quit American Airlines because when they put enough money together, these guys are, you know, they're smart guys. They're investing their money wisely. They're buying a home in the Bahamas, real estate here or there.
And in 1987, TJ very quickly becomes the boss we all wish we had. He's got dozens and dozens of employees now who are not only making a lot of money, but they're having a blast doing it. And TJ rewards his team by throwing them parties. Crazy fraternity type sex, drugs, and rock and roll parties.
And whenever we party, and God knows we party, and I don't even want to go into that because that's really triple X rated. So these parties consisted in the Bahamas, where I control everything. So we fly an airplane over there full of chicks. And then we take a kilo of cocaine, open it up, put it on top of the table, you know, cut a window, put it on a silver platter, and have at it, party for the weekend. We all made money. So now we party. I would leave those guys alone while they're partying. I would go to my other house. I had another house at the end of the island because it was just too bizarre. Those guys were—it's just stuff that, you know, triple X-rated stuff. I just wasn't into all that, but they earned it though.
TJ is living a double life at this point. His family thinks all this money and all these properties in the Bahamas come from proceeds TJ's making with his Lamborghini dealership. Or with his housing development. Or his cell phone company. Or his charter airplane business.
You know, my family didn't have any idea, right? Because I hit it really well.
But every now and then, TJ's separate worlds collide. Jonathan Walton here from Queen of the Con. Getting scammed completely changed the trajectory of my entire life. And when the man you're about to meet got scammed, it changed the trajectory of his entire life too.
By day, I owned and operated the largest Lamborghini dealership in the world. But by night, I flew tons of cocaine for Pablo Escobar.
This is the greatest story that's never been told because this guy's been in prison.
You're out of prison, what, 2 days now?
Yeah, 3 days.
And here we are talking.
Listen to Cocaine Air wherever you get your podcasts.
So my mom says to me one day, she goes, I would like to do something really nice for your Aunt Esperanza. And I say, yeah, what do you want to do for her? She goes, do you think we can go to your beach house in the Bahamas and spend like a weekend over there and have like a birthday party over there and everything? I say, sure, Mom, that wouldn't be a problem. You need to let me know how many people are going to go so I know what airplane to use, whether it's going to be 14 people or 6 people so I could, you know, choose the airplane to take everybody over there. Because this island, again, there's no airlines going there. It's all chartered. She goes, okay, that'd be great. And I just realized that we had just done a trip there a day before. They're going to go over there. So I call up Jack. And I said, hey, Jack, remember when we just finished the trip and you guys were partying in the house? Yeah, what about it, T? I said, what'd you do with a kilo of cocaine? He goes, so I put it on the cupboard. I put it on top of the cupboard, the drop ceiling. Back in those days, it was drop ceiling. You kind of lift, you know. He said, I put it on top of the cupboard. It's up there on the plate. So I said, okay, fire up the plane. I'm on my way over there to the airport right now. We got to go to the island. He goes, why? I said, because I got my aunt, my mom, and them. I got one of those aunts that likes to open up every drawer and see what's going on, Curious George type thing.
And TJ is infinitely more scared of his family finding out that he's a cocaine kingpin than the authorities finding out.
I said, my God, if they found any cocaine there, I would be dead. I'd rather get arrested, you know? So we go over there and we land at the airport. And I have my state guy that takes care of my property. He's picking me up. So he's there with his car. I get off the airplane, I jump in the car, and I drive over to the house. I say to Jack, wait for me here. I'll be right back. Where'd you say it? Kitchen top. I said, okay. So I go over there and I lift the ceiling and I'm feeling for this thing, right? And I feel, okay, I got the plate. As I'm sliding the plate out from underneath or on top of the cabinet, the darn thing slides. It's a paper plate and 8 kilos of cocaine hits me on the head. Now I'm covered with cocaine. It's pure cocaine. I'm freaking out, Jonathan. I don't do drugs, right? So I'm thinking I'm going to die here. I know this stuff goes through your skin.
TJ's right. Cocaine can easily be absorbed through the skin, especially if there's a lot of it. And in this case, there is.
So I'm thinking, oh my God, a kilo of cocaine on my hair, on my arms, it's going through me. Now I start thinking that I'm going to have a heart attack from all this tremendous amount of cocaine hitting me on the head. You know, I'm feeling this thing. The more I thought about it, the more my heart started to race. So what do? I run into the shower with my shoes and everything. I lean up against the wall, turn on the faucet. Now I got the shower hitting me. I got cocaine dripping off my body. The more I thought about it, the harder my heart beat. And I'm sitting there, I can't believe I'm gonna die like this.
So TJ frantically rinses that kilo of coke out of his hair, off his face, off his arms and hands, and spends a few minutes under the shower spray, catching his breath, waiting for his heart to stop racing. And eventually, it does.
So I turn off the water, I look over. I got a trail of cocaine from the kitchen to the shower. Powdered cocaine all over the place, powdered, you know, little nuggets and stuff. So now I grab a broom and I grab a dustpan. I shovel everything in there. I flush it down the toilet. I'm soaking wet. I don't have any extra clothes there. So I come out dripping wet. I get in the car and the guy goes, what happened to you? I said, it's a long story.
And that guy, that driver, really loves TJ because he pays him well and he treats him like family. TJ surrounds himself with really hardworking, really trustworthy people. But one day, TJ discovers one of his underlings is stealing from him. This guy pocketed $100,000 from a multi-million dollar cocaine sale because he figured no one would notice. But TJ did, and he confronts the thief in question, and this guy starts shaking with fear because he's certain TJ is going to kill him. But TJ actually has other plans.
I said to the guy, I'm going to let you live. But I can't let you walk out of the house like this because you're a snake. You got no backbone. You robbed me. When all you had to do was ask me for $1 million and I would have given it to you. And you robbed me for $100,000. You're a real piece of shit. I said, I'm going to let you live. You're going to walk out that door. You're going to move from the state of Florida. I don't want to see you again ever. I want people to think you're actually dead. Okay, it'll help you and it'll help my image. I said, but before I could do that, since you're such a snake, I gotta put a little backbone into you. That guy had the guy kneeling down for a week, okay? I wouldn't let him stand up. He had to be on his knees. So I said, look up to me. So I took a bottle of champagne. I busted the bottle of champagne in the kitchen. Took the bottle that was the part of the bottle that was broken and I slit my own thumb here. And I said, now drink the blood of a man so I can put a little backbone in you.
So that terrified thief is now on his knees and a dozen of TJ's other employees are in the room watching this crazy scene unfold with their eyes wide open and jaws dropped. All of a sudden, that thief on his knees actually starts drinking the blood trickling from TJ's thumb.
My guys are looking at this thing. The theatrics are off the scale. They're like, God darn, T, that's really gross. I'm rubbing my blood all over the guy's face. Guy's drinking my blood. He's on his knees. You see this stuff in a movie, you're like, going down, that's really gross, man. But it does send a message. He let you live. This is what happens. Don't steal from him. I'm the kind of guy that will spend $1 million to go chase one penny if you rob me. And I made it clear like that, because you have to let these people know. Whether I do or I don't, I'm setting precedence.
And the guy who drank your blood.
Yeah, never saw him again. He moved out of the state.
Needless to say, that was the last time anyone stole anything from TJ Dominguez.
That story spread among my guy. And it was like, what do you do? You don't want to steal from Tito, man. He's like, nut.
So it's 1987 now, and TJ is making millions of dollars every week. He's got planes flying cocaine from Colombia to his hotel that's perpetually under renovation in the Bahamas. And he's got boats smuggling all that cocaine from the Bahamas into South Florida. At this point, TJ has a giant mansion in an affluent suburb of Fort Lauderdale that he uses to store his tons and tons of cocaine.
I got this badass house, right, in a country club, multi-million-dollar house, and it's a safe house, and nobody knows where that house is at. Nobody knows where that house. There's only three people that knew that house. It would be me, one of my guys, Flash, and my other guy, Yeyo. It's a house that we store cocaine in. Now, when you're my buyer and you're picking up 300 kilos or 200 kilos, I take your car. I tell you to drop off the car, say at a shopping center or Burger King. Leave the keys in the sun visor. I don't want to meet anybody. I don't want to see anybody. So he drops off the car. Oh, and by the way, I get paid ahead of time. Never put the money and the cocaine in the same location. Never. Never. So I get the key now, right? And I tell you, listen, it's going to take me an hour or two, okay? So I got to drive away, all right? So just hang out. Actually, the house is right around the corner. So you don't have any idea where the house is at. I do not want anybody to know where the house is at.
So TJ leaves his cocaine customer at a nearby shopping center or Burger King, drives his customer's car to the safe house, fills the trunk with a few hundred kilos of coke, and drives the car back, leaves the keys in the visor, and walks away. TJ has already been paid, and now that customer has his cocaine. It's a system that works flawlessly. Until one day, TJ and his crew, Flash and Yeyo, are at the safe house, dividing up tons of cocaine, getting it ready for sale.
So I'm separating my stuff. If I'm separating my stuff, and I got a room full of cocaine over there, one of my guys, Yeyo, comes up to me. Just like really, really tense. And he goes, man, we got problems. And I'm like, what? You know, he says, we're surrounded. I said, surrounded? What are you talking about, man? He goes, they're here, man. The feds are here. I said, man, I don't joke like that. I don't like those kind of jokes. They're not funny. He goes, I'm not joking, goddammit. I've done time in Cuba. And because this guy was a little bit like Scarface, right? A real one, though. And he says, I'm not going back. They're not taking me alive. If they want me, they're going to have to come shoot me. And I said, he's got the machine gun in his hand, right? This guy is like going bunkers. I'm calm down, man. Let me see what's going on. Let me, you know, assess the situation. Don't do anything. All right, but I'm not going out that door in handcuffs. All right. So I run up to the balcony in the house, big house, 8,000 square feet or more. I look out the balcony. Damn, if he wasn't wrong, man, the feds are there. They got the town cars out there. Same color, Mercury, to Henry Boyle. you know, and they got the trunks open. They got pump guns, shotgun. They're putting on their jacket, marshals, yellow things on the back and all. Holy shit, we have problems, man.
At that very moment, there are dozens and dozens of uniformed federal agents with guns drawn, lining the street in front of TJ's safe house.
But they're not doing anything. They're all talking. They're on their radios. They're right directly in front of my house, right directly in front of the house. What the hell's going on, man? And you know, well, maybe they're waiting for more backup so they could surround us, you know? And it was escalating. The tension inside the house was escalating to the point that I said, all right, this is simple, man. I know it wasn't me, so it's one of you two guys. Who's the rat here? And I'm pointing fingers. Who dropped the ball here? It's your buyer, okay? Explain to me how long you've known this god darn buyer. What do you know this guy from? I know it's not him, because he's not in this thing. Yeah, yo, you're the guy that had the buyer. Yeah, yo, explain to me how this shit's going. What happened here? Man, I'm telling you, I know my guy. My, it's not my guy. So we're arguing amongst each other. I go back out to the left. Yeah, yo is like, you know, you're taking the gun and ramming it back and forth and pacing. Tension's really escalating. I said, listen, man, I can't take this anymore. I'm going to go out there and find out what the hell's going on. I'm going to get arrested. I'm going to find out what the hell's going on. You're not going out there. I'm going to go out there. So the house had a garage with a wind wall, so you didn't see the garage from the street. The garage opened up to the side of the house, a big house, and it had hedges all over the place. So I said, I'm just going to go out there and test the water. I'm going to act like I don't know what the hell's going on. If they say anything to me, maybe I'll speak Spanish, and I'll say I'm just the lawn guy. You know? So I grab a broom, right, and I just open the garage door. And I grab this push broom, and I'm kind of like inching my way out past the wind wall. I look over and I see all the cars out there, and I'm not really looking over there, but I'm looking from the corner of my eye, and I'm push brooming all the pavers.
And when those federal agents spot TJ sweeping the driveway,
you over there with a broom. And he yells at me really loud.
If I gave you $1 million, you'd never be able to guess what happens next.
I don't know what the hell's going on.
To see some incredible photographs documenting TJ's life, go to cocaineair.com. And if you're enjoying Cocaine Air, please hit that share button and text it to your friends and family right now. And if you feel comfortable, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews really help other listeners find us. Cocaine Air was created, written, and executive produced by me, Jonathan Walton, for Jonathan Walton Media. Executive producers, Evan Goldstein, and the inimitable TJ Dominguez. Audio engineering by me, Jonathan Walton. All sound design and editing was done by the super talented Puneeth Shenoy from Podcast Pundits. And the Cocaine Air cover art is by Bobby Animation. We've got a lot of fascinating untold stories like Cocaine Air coming down the pike at Jonathan Walton Media. So subscribe and keep an ear out.